Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family. Finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. Now, here's the host of the top-rated show for moms, Maria Bailey, on Mom Talk Radio.
It is Easter Sunday. Happy Easter to everyone. I hope you found the golden egg. You know, I have to tell you a funny story. So Friday, I gave all of my employees an egg, a single egg, and in a small basket with a piece of chocolate and a little note that said Happy Easter. Well, inside of that single egg, I had placed some money, and it was hilarious. Not one person thought to open the egg to see if I had placed anything in the egg. I guess they shook it and didn't hear anything. But, you know, if you fold up a dollar bill or two, you wouldn't hear it, you know, shaking. Anyhow, finally, somebody needed an egg to stuff for one of their children's baskets. They opened the egg and found the denomination dollar bills that I had put in there, and was thankful that they had not handed it to their children, who I'm sure would have, they said, taken the money and run, basically. But anyways, so make sure you check all those eggs before you put them away and pack them away for another year. So how many Reese eggs did you eat? You know, Reese eggs is the number one Easter candy this year, according to research that I read. I actually read that Peeps was number five. It's fallen all the way down to number five on the list. But have you seen how many different flavors of Peeps there are this year? I bought one of my children coconut Peeps, one of my kids who doesn't eat sugar, sugar-free Peeps, another one of my kids who love cupcakes. I got her birthday cake flavored Peeps. I mean, gosh, like, whatever happened to the days where you got the little pink Peeps or you got the little yellow Peeps and you ate from the tail because you didn't want to eat the head first, right? And they were just Peeps. Like, you just ate them. I guess those days are long gone. And now we have delicacy. It goes along with the whole millennial thing with flavored Lay's chips. You know, now there's bacon, sour cream, and chive Lay's potato chips, and there's jalapeno and nacho cheese Lay's chips. Well, now there are coconut and mint flavored Peeps as well. So back to the original question. I ate, couldn't believe I controlled myself, but the day is not over yet. I've only eaten one Reese egg this year, which is, for me, amazing. It is a huge undertaking for me to walk away. But how many of you guys like to take your Reese egg and put it in the freezer, and then you kind of peel back the chocolate layer, and then you just eat the peanut butter layer last? Or are you one of those that likes to just let it get soft and kind of melty and just crunch right into it? I don't know. Whichever one you are, they are just good, good, good. In fact, I buy them when they go on half off. I don't care if they're in the shape of an egg. I'll eat them all year long. I buy them, and tomorrow I'll be at the grocery store buying the 50% off Reese eggs and putting them in the freezer, and I'll eat one a week for the next 52 weeks until I can buy them fresh again. Anyhow, thank you for listening to Mom Talk Radio today, and I want to thank our sponsor, Tasty Lee Tomatoes. When you want to eat healthy instead of those Reese eggs, go to your produce department and ask for the best tasting tomato there is, Tasty Lee Tomatoes. So we have a packed show for you today, a lot of archives, a lot of new guests. We have one who is out on the circuit. You've seen her on GMA and Fox News this week. She's going to be talking with us in just a second. But up next, when we return, Lauren Brantz. She is an award-winning author, illustrator, and design professional. And you probably have read her book, Harvey, The Child Mime. When we return, we've got Lauren here with us right here on Mom Talk Radio.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
I am delighted to have with us today Lauren Brantz. She's a two-time Emmy Award-winning author, illustrator, and design professional. Her picture book, Harvey the Child Mime, was the recipient of the 2010 Moonbeam Children's Book Award for Best First picture book. She lives in New York City and is on staff at BuzzFeed, writing and illustrating about feminism and body image. So we're going to find out how you combine the two. Welcome, Lauren, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Okay, so what is a feminist baby? Because I understand that's something you've come up with.
Yeah, it's a book. It's a baby book for 0 to 2. And it's about a baby who's a feminist. And she's also just a typical baby. She does what she wants. She doesn't care what other people think. She doesn't let the patriarchy get in her way. And she's very sassy.
And so how would you define or how do you behave when you're a feminist baby?
Well, it's funny because as I was writing it, a lot of the ways she behaves is just like a typical baby. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of every other verse, you know, the one verse tries to hit on something and the next verse is just about being a baby. So, you know, feminist baby. Let me get to this. Feminist baby likes pink and blue. Sometimes she'll throw up on you. So, like, she doesn't let gender norms get in her way, but she also might throw up on you because she's a baby.
I gotcha. So does she, does she contemplate equal pay?
No, not yet. Still a little young.
Okay, well, as soon as she starts getting allowance, then you need to incorporate that in there. So let's talk a little bit about body image. Just give me kind of your 30-second view on women, girls, babies, children, female in general, and body image.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there. One of the first things I did when I got to BuzzFeed was do a post about if Disney princesses had realistic waistlines, because I worked in animation, and that's something I thought about a lot, and I was always horrified by the character designs of women. Their waists are thinner than their necks, which is just, like, biologically not possible. So I think in media and in books and movies, we need to represent a more average image to help prevent the rampant amounts of eating disorders out there. I think it's just an unconscious thing that gets put into their minds.
So do you think there's a reason why illustrators refuse to go that route? Is it because it doesn't sell, or is it because we have this desire to look that way?
Yeah. You know, I was in animation. It's mostly men. I was one of three girls in my entire class at, like, a big animation school. And that they like to draw, you know, overly sexualized women. It's fun. You know, it's fun to draw. They're curvy, they're circles, it's over the top and comes out the pencil easily. But it's not ideal for children. And most cartoons are for children. So I think we rein that in.
So what kind of damage do you think is caused when our kids at an early age are looking at those type of images, even if it's in a board book?
You know, I think it's completely subconscious. They don't put together, like, oh, you know, I want to look like that princess, but, you know, I don't have big boobs and a tiny waist. It just kind of, like, settles into their mind as, like, this is what it looks like to be a beautiful woman. And as they get older, and that's not how they are, because women don't look like that, it can cause problems. I mean, personally, I'm Jewish, and I had a very strong nose when I was born, and I remember, like, fantasizing about having, like, a tiny slope nose like a Disney princess, and being, like, really quite obsessed with it. I didn't think, like, oh, like a Disney princess, but mm-hmm. in my mind, the imagery is exactly like that, just like a little tiny turned up thing. I actually ended up getting a nose job when I was, like, 15, because I just insisted that I had, like, I was horrifying and I had to get it. Had there been different images in the media, maybe I would have felt differently about myself.
Right. Do you think illustrators are doing a better job? Like, I mean, for instance, representing a Jewish girl that may have a distinct nose? Or we still have a long way to go.
I haven't seen that one yet. hopefully sometime soon. They're doing a little bit better. You know, I think Steven Universe is by Rebecca Sugar, and there's some nice, like, thick women in it. And there's definitely some illustrators on Tumblr that are doing awesome, like, diverse and inclusive illustrations. But for the most part, you know, it's all very cookie cutter look out there.
Right. So when you're illustrating a book, because I think as moms, we just flip through a book and we, you know, we just look at the pages or we read the words to our kids and we don't think about the amount of work that goes into the, how do you come up with the right illustration for the words?
You know, I think that part for me personally is actually one of the easier parts. I have more trouble with the getting the text right. But once it's there, the images are very obvious to me, like what I should draw. And she's so easy to draw and so cute to draw that it was very easy.
She is. And where do moms find the book?
You can find it online on Amazon or Indie Books or Barnes & Noble. And it's in most stores everywhere, I think.
Well, congratulations on your 2010 award and all that you've been doing. And also, thank you for thinking about the body images that we really should instill in our kids. It's a really noble thing, and I know by the tone of your voice and your work that you're very passionate about it, and I think that's something that all moms appreciate. I want to let everybody know that you can go to laurynbrantz.com. That's LORYNBRANTZ.com to find out more information. Better yet, you can go to momtalkradio.com where we have a link to Lauren on our website. So check it out. Get the book. It makes a great baby shower gift or maybe a gender reveal gift. Pick one up, pick up a couple, and share them. Thank you so much. And when we return, I'm going to reach into the archives, and we're going to turn a spotlight on a mom that I thought did an exceptionally great job here on Mom Talk Radio.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
Turning today's spotlight on one mom who has two daughters. Her name is Nina, and she has a blog, and you can follow her on Twitter. The focus today is leaders, and that's something that we don't often talk about when we talk about moms, but we all know that we're leaders. So I'm excited to have Nina with us today on Mom Talk Radio. Welcome, Nina.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Maria. I'm really excited about this talk, too.
Well, I neglected to tell everyone your website, so could you let everyone know where they can find you?
Yes, it's at ninaobier.com, ninaobier.com.
Great, and we'll have a link on Mom Talk Radio as well. So let's talk about leaders and leadership.
Yeah, I agree with you that we don't talk about it enough. I think when people think of leaders, they think that you're in a company or running a company and have people, you know, underneath you, and they typically just think of it as business. But what I have found is we're all leaders because we have to lead at least one person, and that's ourselves.
One of the things that you do in your daily routine that probably adds to your leadership ability is journaling. I mean, most moms would say, oh my God, I don't have time for one more thing. But can you talk about the benefits that you find in that?
I believe that the morning routine has changed my life. In terms of getting my life back and not putting it in someone else's hands right away. So I personally, for many, many years, I would just set that alarm clock a little bit earlier and find a place, whether it's in your closet or in your bathroom or at your table while the house is quiet, and I would put pen to paper. And there's just something about getting it out of your head and putting it down. There's something that solidifies. There's even scientific proof. But what it does is you're not going to really truly write bad things. You usually end up writing the good things. And what I found, it was kind of setting the intention for my day. And I truly even never go back to it, but it just gets it out there and kind of puts it out in the universe, and I go about my business. So I have been journaling for over 550 days straight.
Wow. So what time do you get up? Just out of curiosity.
Personally, right now, I get up at 5:30 in the morning. I have a very specific morning routine. It does include movement, even if it's only 7 minutes a day. I do my best not to even go to my phone or to my email or to any of those things. Minimum, it's been an hour since I've been awake before I do it, but I'm shooting for 2 hours.
Wow. So wait a minute. So you don't sleep? You don't sleep with your mobile device like I do?
I don't, Maria.
I know. That's a really, really bad habit.
I
use the excuse that I'm just afraid my kids are going to call me or need me in the middle of the night. And of course, they never have. And the one time that they did, I slept through it. But like you, I feel bad in the morning because I get up at 5 o'clock and I don't even say good morning to my husband. Like I put on my tennis shoes. That's like the first thing I do after I brush my teeth, and I go straight to the gym or I go straight to my gym in my garage. And like, I don't even talk to him until I finish my exercising because I just know I would have nothing good that would come out of my mouth at that early in the morning. So what do people find on your blog when they go to it?
I think what you'll find is pretty much just life, everyday life. What I like to do is just once a week ponder. I usually on my fan page on Facebook, I do a video on Monday, and it really is not something I think out. It's just, what did I learn this week? What's going on? What did I, you know, observe? And kind of give those moments, those little brief inspiring moments. This morning, I'm going to be honest with you, I wasn't even truly inspired, but yet I picked up a book and I really meditated on it and said, what is the message that I'm supposed to give to others? And I opened it to a random page. And the coolest thing happened, this quote came up that I had read earlier in the morning in another book. So I knew that's what I was supposed to talk about today. Organically, you know, in the moment, life, I think, is what you'll find.
So we only have 1 minute left. I was just wondering, what would be your, I guess, 30-second inspiration or reflection to moms out there who are crazy busy and just don't know where they can find the time in their day to stop for a few minutes and create a routine for themselves?
My biggest inspiration to you is the person you're with most during the day is yourself. You're with yourself 24/7. So how are you liking that relationship? The most important relationship you can have is with yourself. So I'm sure they've heard it before. When you're at your highest self and you're at your best, you are your best for everyone else around you. And when I learned that message and I really started taking that time, I was serving people on such a higher level. It was crazy. It was totally crazy. So take care of you. It's the relationship you're with for the rest of your life.
Radio, a busy mom's best friend. Now, Maria Bailey on Mom Talk Radio.
I am delighted to have the opportunity to have someone that I've actually this week watched on Good Morning America and Fox News. It seems like every time I'm on the treadmill, Erica is on the screen in front of me. Erica Kamazar is here. She is the publisher of a new book, getting a lot of attention, got a ton of attention on my Facebook yesterday, Being There, Why Prioritizing Motherhood in the First 3 Years Matters. She is a clinical social worker, psychoanalyst, and a parent guidance expert who has been in practice in New York City for 27 years. She does a lot of consulting, a lot of workshops, and has three teenage daughters and has generously offered some of her time to share with us today on Mom Talk Radio. So welcome to the show, Erica.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you, because I've watched all of your interviews this week, and I have to say I was taken back by the book. You certainly are getting a lot of publicity, which is fantastic, and congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I actually yesterday, just so those of you who don't follow me on Facebook, without knowing Erica was on the show today, posted something that I was a little, like, as a mother of four who worked her entire life, was a little taken back by the title of the book. So I just, and I have to say, I could not, like, I just innocently commented about your book on my Facebook page. And I have not ever posted anything on my Facebook page that got more posts in less time and reaction than the post about your book. And I just, it was really interesting. So I just wonder, one of the things that came up a lot was, why this book now? I thought we were well beyond the conversation of moms staying home with their kids.
Well, so I was seeing in my practice an epidemic level of children who were having emotional problems, really emotional regulation problems, stress disorders, things like ADHD and behavioral problems, aggression, social disorders. And I was really connecting them to the absence of mothers. And, you know, I really felt that as a society, we had devalued mothering to the point that we were failing our children. And I started to look into the research and, you know, about 13 years ago, and all of the neuroscience and attachment research, epigenetics research really sort of backed me up in my feeling as a clinician that many of these disorders were related to a kind of devaluing of mothering. So that's why now, because there's been this dramatic increase in mental disorders in children in the last few decades.
So what about those mothers who stay at home? Because this came up on the Facebook page yesterday. Those moms who are in the home, who are not present with their children. So they're in home and they think they're staying at home, doing the best thing, putting their child first, but they're on the computer, they're answering texts. They're, you know, I see moms stay at home. Like, I'm going to use that term very loosely, stay at home moms who are pushing their strollers through the neighborhood and they're texting or they're on the phone talking to friends. So there has to be some kind of definition, right, of connecting with your child in those first 3 years.
So, you know, it really isn't a book about working versus stay at home. It's a book about prioritizing. And we chose that word very carefully because whether you're a working mom or a non-working mom, the idea is that the more emotionally and physically available and present you can be in the first 3 years, the better off your child will be. So what you've just brought up is a good point, which is you can be physically there and be emotionally checked out. The idea is that you have to be there emotionally, but you really can't be there emotionally if you're not there physically. So you know, it really requires both. It's that, it's like that old debate of quality versus quantity time. You need both. You need lots of quality time on your children's terms rather than your terms. And to do that, you need to be there much of the time.
So what about those moms maybe who are single moms? I mean, you look at the Gen X population and more than 50% of them are single moms. Then you look at the millennial generation where moms are deciding to be single because they're putting off marriage and being a good mother is more important than being a good spouse to the millennials. How do you, what do you say to those moms who are saying, you know, I don't have a choice. I have to go to work or I have to be away from my child or, you know, I just, I don't have the flexibility to be with my child more in the day. You know, are they, are you saying, you know, that, that their kids just aren't going to turn out right or there's a higher possibility of them having these issues? I mean, what do you say to those moms?
So I think actually we're failing young mothers in many ways. Well, society's failing mothers overall, I think. You know, we don't have a maternity leave policy. We're the only civilized country that doesn't support mothers and babies. So, but we're failing millennial mothers because, you know, the emphasis is on having children, not on caring for children. So, you know, I would say we're three generations into really devaluing mothering and emphasizing all kinds of other things rather than nurturing and mothering. So, you know, the idea of having children versus caring for children and how hard it is to care for children. You know, and I think we're failing the millennials and that generation by not really telling them how much sacrifice it requires, how much time, how much energy, that you don't sleep for 5 years, not for 5 months, that you actually do not sleep for 5 years when you have a child. So in a way, I think we're failing a lot of young mothers. And in terms of the single mothers and working mothers, there's a lot in the book for single mothers and working mothers. The idea of the book is to help all mothers be as present emotionally and physically as possible in those years. So there's lots of tips and advice for working mothers and single mothers as well.
Yeah. And I agree with you that, you know, being present and connected, a lot of, you know, I had three children under the age of 20 months, and mm-hmm. I worked every single day that my kids have taken a breath, and they've turned out pretty damn good. So I agree with you that it's really important to be present. And I used to have a rule because it's really easy to come home at the end of the day and be washing the dishes or cooking the mac and cheese or whatever. I used to have a rule that I had to speak to them by looking in the whites of their eyes. And if I couldn't see the whites of their eyes, then I wasn't present. And it's really hard. You have to teach yourself to do that. But I do know that just by the feedback on my my page yesterday, that a lot of moms have taken offense to your book. And I just, what would you say to those moms? It sounds like it's more of a tool for them rather than get beyond the title.
Yeah, I mean, I think you always have to get beyond the headlines and the titles and really read the book. I would encourage them to read the book and see that, in fact, the book is very compassionate. I'm very compassionate towards mothers. You know, again, mothering is the hardest job that anyone will ever do. And the truth is about us as mothers is that we have limited resources. We have limited physical resources, limited emotional resources, limited time and energy. And so, you know, if we're going to prioritize our children, you know, whether we're working or not working or single mothers, you know, or mothers with partners, you know, if we understand our limited resources, internal resources, energy and time, and then really prioritize our children, that's what the book is about. And it gives lots of good advice on how all women can be more present. But it's also really a societal criticism where it says, look, we are not valuing mothers and babies and the connection that they have to one another the way that we need to. This is not maternity leave policies are not a luxury. They are a necessity if we're talking about the physical and emotional health of babies and children and mothers and society.
Right. Well, the book is called Being There, Why Prioritizing Motherhood is the First in the First 3 Years Matters. Thank you very much for joining us today, Erica. And we have a link to the book on Mom Talk Radio. When we return, we're going to be joined by MJ Cochran.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
It's interesting that I was actually just having a conversation with someone about family and drinking and the fact that I actually grew up without anyone around me drinking. So I didn't know how to identify when someone had a problem. But I am super excited to have with me today MJ Cochran. She is an international speaker and family coach. She offers coaching sessions to parents and presentations and to schools and nonprofits. And she's here today to talk about family talkaboutdrinking.com. And MJ, thank you for spending some of your time talking about this very important subject. So welcome to Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks, Maria. So glad we could talk about this important topic. And we have a great program with Family Talk About Drinking. And I really do believe that parents are in need of resources and ways to talk to their kids about underage drinking.
Absolutely. I have to tell you that my four kids, I only have one more that is not yet 21. And I am, it's like your kids get to 16, 17 years old and you just can't wait to get them to 21 so that it's just one less thing to worry about. But it's a really huge thing to worry about for all those years. So we all know that it happens. It happens as young as, I mean, in our community, we've seen kids getting drunk in the seventh and eighth grade. What is your initiative? What does it hope to accomplish?
Sure. Well, Anheuser-Busch, really, and myself, the goal is to give parents a resource so that this is an ongoing conversation. And the focus is really creating relationships of trust so that you can openly talk about tough topics like underage drinking. So the focus of Family Talk About Drinking is really to give parents those pieces of information to know that there's really three stages of parenting. And one is when kids are under 8 years of age, and that's really the time where we're teaching. You know, we're teaching them how to tie their shoes, how to walk, all those things. And that's where we can talk about underage drinking, or at least that you have to be 21 to drink at that during that phase, because it's important that kids know what's right and what's wrong. And then as you reach the 8 to 14-year-olds, where kids are starting, their brains are developing in so many different ways that they're starting to compare and contrast and check out what their friends are doing, and it becomes very, very clear to them that, oh, well, that's what they do, so why can't I? And that's the point where parenting changes into more of a let's help them problem solve. And our questioning changes. We don't just tell them what to do or teach them what to do. We start saying, what would you do if on Friday night there's a party and there's alcohol there? So they're open-ended questions that cause the child to problem solve with you.
Yeah.
Rather than just say, now you know not to drink, right? That does not allow a child to really think through situations.
So it sounds like number one is opening the lines of communication, and number two is not asking, you know, it's asking open-ended questions and situational questions that will allow the conversation to go both ways, right?
Yes. And then three really is about parent support. One, before you ever have a conversation with your child, both parents need to be on the same page. So you need to have a conversation between the parents to say, where are we on this? Like, is it okay for on special occasions, or is it not okay? And because parents think very differently.
Go to familytalkaboutdrinking.com, and there you can find more information, advice, and thank you, MJ, so much for spending some of your time with us today. It's a really, really important subject matter, and I'm glad that you and Anheuser-Busch is behind this initiative. When we return,
thank
I'm reaching
Maria.
Into the archives to find some of my most favorite shows of last April, and I think you're going to be really thrilled with the ones I've decided to replay today, because they're really, really special to me and got a lot of reactions from mom. So when we return, I'm reaching into the archives to bring you the very best of this time last year. Talking to you about how in May I have four graduations from colleges. Every weekend in May, one of my kids is graduating from college, and including myself, who, I'll be getting my MBA from Notre Dame. And so I know a lot about paying out-of-state tuition and the cost of colleges. So when I saw this come across my desk, when I saw Brad of Taming the High Cost of College.com, when I saw his name come across my desk, I'm like, he is on Mom Talk Radio. And I said, book him immediately. So I am ecstatic to have him here today. He is a late stage, not sure what that is, late stage college planning specialist. I mean, I guess that's for the parents who didn't start saving $10 a week when the child was born. But he helps parents of high school students plan and pay for college using strategies such as merit aid and a lot of other things that I'm going to ask him about. And he's just in time because my kids, two of them, are going to grad school. So, Brad, welcome to Mom Talk Radio.
All right. Thank you.
So, first of all, my philosophy is, Brad, that what I've learned, I don't care if I had started saving $10 a week when my kids were born. it still wouldn't have covered the cost of some of the colleges out there. So is it too late if we find ourselves with teenagers and no savings?
Certainly is not too late, and that's the whole reference to late-stage college planning.
Okay.
Some people have saved that big pot of money, not many, but there's a few out there that have a big pot of money all set aside and ready to go for college. But most families are running a little short, all the way down to some of them are at zero, of course. Mm-hmm. And no matter where you are as far as saving, late-stage college planning is, well, what are we going to do now? We've got a junior, you know, we can save a little bit, but that's not going to be the focus anymore. Now we need to figure out need-based aid and merit aid and loans and understanding, you know, what schools actually cost and which one might be lower cost and all the visits and testing and all the different things you need to do.
Right.
And that so, 2 years prior to college starting.
So what is the most common mistakes that families are making?
Some of the big ones would be assuming that you will qualify for aid or assuming that you won't, and essentially you're wrong. It's not an easy thing to figure out for some families in that it's not automatic when you say, well, you know, the guy sitting next to me at work didn't get any aid, therefore I will not. And again, to give you an example, I've seen families earning $75,000 not qualify for aid, and I've seen families earning $300,000 qualify.
Right.
So it's a lot more complicated than what did you earn or what are in your investments. It's also the price of the schools and the age of the parents and whether or not they're both working. So there's a lot of factors that go into it in order to really understand the whole process. So
right.
For most families, you got to spend a little time and actually learn the specifics for your family instead of just assuming based on, you know,
right.
some cocktail party somewhere.
Right, exactly. And it would have been great to have someone like you when I was starting out, because what I found is that, yes, there is aid out there, but then you don't know whether or not it makes sense to take it. Like, you know, you have people at cocktail parties telling you, yeah, go ahead and take the loan. It's low interest. Let your child take it out and build their credit and you pay it back or whatever. And you're just, it's a very confusing process.
I would agree. Yeah, there's a lot of components and there's a lot of different pieces to it. And again, I caution that every family, you know, is a little bit different as far as what they should and shouldn't do. I've had parents come to me and say, we don't believe in loans. We're not going to take any loans. The student's not going to take any loans. And that's fine, assuming you've got mm-hmm. other resources to tap into. And I've had other families say, you know, we don't have a lot of resources. We fully understand that loans will be a big part of our plan. And
right.
again, there's no right or wrong. Obviously, if you take loans, they come along with interest and payments.
Right.
But for a lot of kids, it makes sense to, you know, get their degree and get out there in the workforce and start earning.
Right, right. Well, we only have 1 minute. So I want to make sure that we get your website in there. And if you could, in 45 seconds, tell us your website and what parents will benefit from by coming to it.
All right. So it's tamingthehighcostofcollege.com. And at tamingthehighcostofcollege.com/EFC, as an example, we have a financial aid calculator where you can actually calculate how much aid you're eligible for based on your specific income and assets. There's also a lot of great articles and other podcasts there where you can learn all kinds of great information about all things college.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And we're going to have a link to tamingthehighcostofcollege.com. You guys should listen to Brad's podcast because I wish I had. And there is so much to learn. And there is money out there. So don't discount it at all. I'm Maria Bailey, and I want to thank you for joining us today on Mom Talk Radio. I'll see you again next week.